The coronavirus is the biggest threat this country has faced for decades.
We have asked everyone in Wales to make changes in the way we live our lives.
Stay at home during this pandemic.
Welcome to Journos in Lockdown,
a podcast created by trainee broadcast journalists who are learning to report in a global pandemic.
As we've not been able to go out and meet journalists, we've decided to bring them to you and ask them what challenges coronavirus has brought them
and what the future of journalism might look like.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Journos in Lockdown. I'm Gareth Axenderry, and a couple of weeks ago I caught up with Will Haywood from Wales Online. Will's made a pretty rapid rise through the ranks at the organisation, starting out as a reporter before becoming social affairs correspondent, and finally crossing over to political editor just before the coronavirus lockdown. In 2019, he won Welsh Journalist of the Year, so who better to talk about the challenges facing journalists in Wales at the moment and what the future may hold? So thanks for joining us today, Will. I appreciate it's a crazy time for you at the moment. Just to kick things off, I just want to ask you to give us a quick rundown of how you've got into journalism. Has it always been an ambition of yours?
No, not even slightly. I left university, I did a degree in politics, and then I worked for myself for 4 years doing fitness training. Did like a little kind of fitness website. After doing that for about 4 years, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I knew I didn't want to keep doing that. And I just thought, what would I be pleased to say that I did? And what would I enjoy doing? And I'd started doing some like little blogs for my, to try and promote the website. And I actually bumped into a guy who did the course at Cardiff University. And we were just chatting. He said he worked as a journalist and he recommended that course as a way to go into it. So I just kind of speculatively applied for that course, got on, and I quit the business and got this job at Wales Online straight afterwards. So it was never a kind of grand plan. I'm quite dyslexic and I'm not very, I can barely spell. So I had always kind of ruled out writing as a profession, but the more I kind of looked into journalism, the more I realized that, yes, you do need that spelling, punctuation, grammar kind of stuff. But the key, that's very much a small part of what makes a good journalist, I think. And I believe that a lot of the stuff I did in my business helped me be good at the other parts of journalism and hopefully offset the absolutely atrocious spelling.
And just briefly, obviously coming from, you know, a background where you didn't, you know, had no intention of going into journalism, do you think that aided you in any way, kind of coming into it with a fresh perspective as opposed to maybe somebody who, you know, has grown up wanting to be a journalist? Do you think it kind of aided you in any way, or did you feel like maybe you had to catch up?
I don't know if it makes me better placed than somebody who has always wanted to do it. I think if it's your passion and it's always been what you want to do, you're going to have lived and breathed it for much longer. But I do think that a lot of the things that I did before I became a journalist have helped. And it's not even like the jobs which they're probably like you'd consider the best jobs. The things that helped me most was working in call centres, working in a pub, doing shifts in really rough pubs. I had a job where I had to try and get builders to take on apprenticeships. I had to convince the young people to go on the apprenticeship, and both parties weren't that keen on doing it. So a lot of that kind of approaching people, having to build a rapport, maintaining relationships. I mean, I hated it at the time, but it has stood me in good stead for the career that I do now. Because journalism is just about people. So it has probably helped, but completely inadvertently. But I imagine if I'd spent that time doing internships in newsrooms, it probably would have helped me just as much.
Now, you became Welsh political editor towards the start of the coronavirus pandemic. You almost kind of found yourself in like the fill-in between Brexit and coronavirus sandwich in a way. Did you really have any idea what the role would entail at that time? And how has it been for you sort of over the last 6 months or so?
I had no idea. So Paul, who's the editor-in-chief at Media Wales, asked if I wanted to cover for Ruth Mazowski, who's the actual political editor, while she was on maternity leave for a year. And it's probably shortchanged the people of Wales a lot, because Ruth Mazowski is an outstandingly good reporter who knew her beat really, really well. I think he first spoke to me at the end of maybe mid to late February. So coronavirus was a thing, but it wasn't the thing. It was like kind of SARS. It was something that was bad. I think it was a concern, but I mean, any person without expertise who said, yeah, they knew how this was going to go is, I would suggest, being liberal with the truth. So Yeah, it was pretty much, I started my first official day in the role as we went into lockdown. So I've actually never worked a shift as the political editor in the office, wow, which is quite surreal. And I imagine that we'll only be going back into the office after I've finished. So all I've ever known is my house doing this role, which is weird because so much of this job would normally be going for a coffee with politicians. It would be going to briefings. It would be talking to people. And it still is that, but it's all done digitally. In answer to your question, no, I had no idea what I was getting into.
And the fact that obviously coronavirus being, it's a completely different thing maybe to some of the political things you'd been involved with before, like Brexit, etc. How quickly have you had to kind of upskill or up your knowledge, you know, medically or scientifically, just to be able to understand some of the things that are going on a daily basis?
Although I hadn't been political editor, I was social affairs correspondent. So I did help out with a lot of kind of the political side. So in terms of that bit, it hasn't been as big a jump as it could have been, although it does still feel pretty big. In terms of the science, I love science. I mean, my dream job would be to write about climate change and the environment. Like, I really think that ultimately that is the only story, but it obviously isn't. But I think when we look back at this period, coronavirus will be a big deal, but climate change will be the thing. So I had an interest in science. I mean, I wasn't an epidemiologist. I wasn't that into that sort of stuff, but I had enjoyed reading and learning about science. So, but yeah, it's been a jump, but it hasn't been completely alien to me. I think if I had my life again, I'd love to have gone into sciences. I think to have actual skills as opposed to just being good at talking to people.
And you say that obviously you're not an epidemiologist, like, you know, like most journalists aren't, and certainly most journalists don't tend to come from scientific backgrounds. How quickly do you think journalists have been able to come up to speed to being able to report? I think traditionally science reporting has been something that maybe the media and journalists have kind of lacked on slightly, in terms of being able to relay what's quite complex information to a level that you know, the general public, me and you, can understand. How well do you think journalists have adapted to being able to do that on a daily basis as opposed to just health and science correspondents?
I think it is hard, especially initially, because you want to be able to ask the right questions. Like, you know how to ask questions, all the training and stuff you do, you're equipped to interview and question, but you don't even know if you're barking up the right tree. Like, I couldn't have told you about proteins on a virus and DNA and RNA until I sat through technical briefings. If we are going to speak in generalities, the media and journalists, I think, have done well in that they've managed to focus fairly well on what the actual story of this is. And the story in the UK isn't, oh, this virus has spike proteins and can last on copper for about an hour and can last on other hard surfaces for days. The actual story is, why doesn't that nurse have any masks? And why is that person been put into a care home when they could have that symptom? And why can't we test that person? So it's still humanizing the issue, which I think is the key to telling these stories. Because ultimately, as I said before, it is all just about people. So yeah, you need to be abreast of the science. You need to understand it. But actually, people dedicate their lives to understanding these things, and you're never going to understand it as well as somebody who is an expert in it. And if you did, you wouldn't, if you applied yourself that much to it, you'd never be able to report on anything else ever again, because that's all you'd have dedicated your time to. I think journalists have done, in my experience, I mean, I don't know all the journalists, but the journalists I know, I think, have acquitted themselves well in terms of trying to understand the science.
You're one of the few journalists who's actually asked a question at both the Welsh and UK government press briefings. What sort of differences have you encountered between each government in terms of transparency and their attitude and working with the media or with journalists?
What you've got to remember is the UK government is an immeasurably bigger beast. It is enormous in terms of the departments and the bureaucracy within it. I have found, in terms of the leaders speaking, interviewing Mark Drakeford has been a very different proposition to trying to get information from the UK government. The UK government has not necessarily, I think, acquitted itself very well distinguishing Welsh issues and Scottish issues, apart from and separating them from what are essentially English issues. A lot of that is because they don't necessarily, it's not priority for them to do that. It sounds much better, I imagine, for Boris Johnson to stand up and say the UK government as opposed to England, because there isn't actually an English government per se, which is one of the many quirks of our devolved settlement. I have found with Mark Drakeford, he's been very good at explaining his rationale behind doing stuff, why they're making decisions. However, that I'm not saying that's because the Welsh government are brilliant at doing that. I think it's because he is somebody who has an academic background and has a bit of a passion for policy. So I wouldn't want to put Mark Drakeford's personality and oratory style as the benchmark for an entire system. I think the Welsh government could be a lot better. We're speaking about this and we're about almost a week into the Dominic Cummings affair. And I mean, might have noticed that certain journalists don't get a follow-up question. The press conferences, I think things like that do speak to maybe a unhealthiness in terms of what the role of journalism is perceived to be by the government. But that would be, as I say, it's a very big beast. There are a lot of people who are very forthcoming and helpful within those governments at providing stories and information as you require it. But in my, as I say, very limited experience, there is some differences between the two administrations.
And when we've seen, you know, UK politicians not making that distinction between, you know, the Welsh Parliament and the UK Parliament. And I know that Dominic Raab a couple of weeks ago was referring to the Welsh Parliament as the Welsh Executive, which is another, you know, phrase that adds confusion into that mix. How much more difficult does that make your job in trying to report accurately on what the differences are here in Wales compared to the rest of the UK?
It gets easier because you get to know what's devolved, but there are huge complications in our devolution settlement. So for instance, I did the story a couple of months ago that Welsh prisons, I think they are 6% of the prison population and are 25% of coronavirus cases. That's obviously bad, but the prisons are run by the UK government, apart from Park, which is run by G4S. But healthcare in prisons is devolved, so that is a really hard thing to work out, you know, those little quirks of the settlement. I think in a way it makes it our job harder, but it also makes our job more important, because if you go and look at a newsstand now, you'll see the Times, the Sun, all the others, and they will have lockdown over or track and trace starting this date. Naturally, there's no Welsh editions, which is what you do find in Scotland. Obviously, I write for the Western Mail, which is the Welsh National Welsh paper, and the South Wales Echo, which is the Cardiff area paper. Not every person in Wales will read them. Wales Online actually has an enormous reach, but you're still fighting against that. The fact that the people who, let's not forget, people in Wales elected the government, the UK government. They are their government as well. And when they say things, it would be perfectly natural for them to think it applies to them. So I think it makes our job challenging, but I think it makes it really important.
You've asked a fair number of politicians questions now in your career. A simple question for you with probably a difficult answer, but how do you get a politician to answer a question?
I think it depends on the politician. It depends on the question. It depends on the situation. So a question I asked in the UK government press conference was about, as we just said, the language that is sometimes used, and that Welsh issues aren't necessarily clearly Welsh only or English only issues aren't necessarily very well defined. So with that question, you're almost asking the question to make a point and to raise it as an issue. Their response is not as important. If I am asking a question of someone like Mark Drakeford, if you want a answer, the best way to get one is to be uncombative. In general, obviously there's times that a lot of people have got this perception that holding governments to account is just endlessly having a go at them. And actually a huge part of our job is to inform the public as well. And that person is the person that makes the decision on whether they can see their family ultimately. So I did an interview with him where some people found it frustrating that I'd been fairly cordial and friendly. And it was like, well, that interview got read by 150,000 people in Wales. And they were all, the mass majority read to the end of that article. And they haven't done that because they're furious at the fact I hadn't asked him a question. They did that because that article was providing some insight into their life and allowing them to make decisions that affect themselves and their family. So I think the best way to do it is to judge it on the person you're speaking to, on the scenario, and also what you want to get from that question. Someone from Wales Online does the Welsh Government briefing, attends it every day. We live blog it. We give it more coverage than any other news organisation. And in that, quite often, we need to, if we're committing resource to it, we don't have the resources of the BBC. If we're committing a journalist to attend that and someone else to live blog it and then someone to do spin-offs from it, we need a return in terms of a story from that. We want to be coming away with a story. And so actually, quite often, like yesterday, I said, it's probably not a good example because it didn't actually work, but how many people have died in Welsh care homes? That was the question. And whatever answer is given there, you should get a story from that. If it's X amount, this is the story. If it's a small amount, it's less than England, that's a story. If they don't know, it's almost a bigger story. So actually, I think clarity of your goal is the best way to ask a question. What are you trying to get from it? But ultimately, if somebody's a senior politician, they've got there because they're good at not answering questions. So if somebody decides they're not going to answer it, we've seen it with Boris Johnson before the liaison committee. If they don't want to answer a question, they're just not going to answer it. And they'll look a bit ridiculous. But ultimately, they've made a calculation. The harm of looking a bit stupid is offsets the danger of actually putting that information into the public domain. I mean, you can't torture them and make them answer a question.
Let's turn away from coronavirus now. You've written a lot of longer investigative pieces as well, some pretty moving personal pieces on, like you said earlier, about dyslexia. And you won Welsh Journalist of the Year last year. What's your favourite story you've written?
The column on dyslexia was the first time I'd written a first-person piece. I think your best features and your best columns are when you give a bit of yourself. But the problem is the world is full of horrible people, and especially Twitter can be quite a nasty place. So giving a bit of yourself does make you feel quite vulnerable. So I'd say that one was the first time I'd opened up and given more of myself than I was necessarily comfortable with, and I'm glad I did it. Probably the most fun I had ever writing something was when I wrote a column on what it's like to do a triathlon with no training. And I only did it because we didn't have I'd done a triathlon with no training because we got given it as like a free press entry, and I thought, why not? And I only wrote the column because we had a gap in Wales on Sunday. And so I just thought, I'll just bash that out. And actually, it did really, really well. And it actually, that got me my regular column in The Echo, which along with a piece in the Western Mail magazine, is one I do every week. That one, I think, was the one I've enjoyed in terms of first-person pieces. In terms of investigations, the series of things I've done on domestic violence, I think, have been the hardest and the most harrowing, but also the ones that I think have probably meant the most to me. Like, it's helped people move on with their life after stuff I can only imagine. So I'd say those ones. I mean, the long, long investigations of, by the end of it, you actually just want them out of your life. You just hate them. So it's really nice to get good feedback and stuff. But actually, I was like, oh God, I don't want to do that ever. I don't want to do that ever again. But I would say that. Maybe a piece I did on Penrickiber in the Cullen Valley on child poverty was a really nice one to be part of, just because it gave a voice to a community which I really fell a bit in love with. And I that was quite a unique feeling for me doing that. But yeah, I would say the domestic violence stuff and the column on doing a triathlon and almost dying.
I take my hat off to anybody who does a triathlon anyway. So the fact that you both did a triathlon without training and wrote a piece on it is pretty cool. You said earlier about how climate change is something that you love to write about, but is sort of the major issue or the main issue that you see sort of coming down the road. What are the big issues, or what do you think the big issues and challenges are coming down the road then for journalists in Wales in particular?
The big issues, I think, are violence against women. Put it this way, the amount of women who are killed and assaulted by ex-partners, if that was terrorism or something of that nature, there would be Cobra meetings, there would be non-stop coverage, it would consume all attention. we talk about minorities and we talk about supporting minorities, which is important, but women are, like, half of us are women. It's half of the population. In fact, it's more than half because they live longer. We have to address it. So I would say that. Other things other than climate change, I think that poverty and inequality are just another, it's another one. We're talking about issues that affect a lot of people. Poverty is a huge one, and it's one that isn't easily solved and isn't going away. And also, if you actually look at the policies of lots of governments, it's not like they're really even trying to make it go away. Other things, I would say that the settlement in the UK in terms of devolution and government shouldn't be to anybody's satisfaction. I'm not saying I'm pro Welsh independence or Scottish independence, but I think the status quo is fairly untenable in terms of it just doesn't work. We've got a electoral system which a government can win 1.5% more votes than they did last time, and they can have a stomping majority. You have parties like the Brexit Party and the Green Party who can win enormous amounts of votes and have no representation. Like, wherever your political leanings are, you can't look at this and say it works because it doesn't. So that would be, I mean, that's my opinion, but that's all I can really give on what I think the issues are going to be. The final one I would say is the role of automation in production. We are not, a lot of jobs aren't going to exist in 10 years, and we need to find a way to make that a good thing and not a bad thing. Ultimately, we are going to be able to produce a lot more stuff, a lot quicker, a lot more cheaply. And it's important that people are able to exploit the advantages of that, because there are huge advantages to be had.
The good news from, you know, prospective journalists' point of view, I guess, is that there's plenty of issues there to be getting people's teeth into. So that's certainly a positive thing for those people potentially listening who, you know, will be in your shoes in the years to come. You probably get asked the advice question quite a lot, so I'm going to flip it slightly. What's one great piece of advice you've received, and what's one awful piece of advice you've received?
Two good pieces of advice I'll give you. One was from a guy who came in to give us a talk when we were at university, and he said, in journalism you don't get praise, you just get another day, which I think is really good. Like, when I wrote my first like big long read, I thought I'd come into the newsroom and there'd be a like parade, people would just be applauding. I thought I might be carried around a bit on like a plinth or a throne, and you wouldn't have known anything had happened. You just get another day, and in a way, after a while you get used to that and realize actually that's a much better way to do than a big mutual backslap, which actually erodes anything. So yeah, accepting the fact that you're not going to get praised for every little thing you do is probably quite a thing that's worth taking on board. Bad advice. I don't know if it was necessarily advice that one person gave me, but I think there's an impression that you have to dedicate every fiber of your being to this job, and it's really easy to get full of your own importance. And I think the thing to remember is, I think I've said it before, we're not important, really. We're not saving lives. We're not going into burning buildings. We're just telling people stories. And don't get too high on yourself, but also don't get too low on yourself. Just enjoy the fact that you get to tell stories for a living, because that's such a privilege. The bad advice in that was that everything really, really matters. It doesn't. I mean, that might sound a bit miserable, but actually it's quite a liberating thought.
Do you think that potentially maybe a good piece of advice then off the back of that to prospective journalists would be, you know, don't put yourself at the center of a story. Don't make it about you. Don't think about what have I done, but more what are the stories that I'm telling? What difference is the words I've written or the pieces to radio that I've done? What difference have they made to other people's lives?
Yeah, and that's something that I have to work on every day, because I sometimes have an inclination and I see what I've done and I'm like, bloody hell, you just tried to make that the Will Hayward show. Like, what are you doing, you clown? Why do people don't care about the person who writes it? They care about the story they've been told and the information they've been given. So don't make it about you. But I could do with following my own advice sometimes on that.
And finally then, you've had a little screen time now at the press briefings. Do you have an itch to cross into broadcasting at any point? And if not, where do you see yourself in sort of 10 years time?
I don't really have much of an inclination to go into broadcast, just in terms of day-to-day broadcast journalism. I like the autonomy I get with my job now. Like, I get to go, I get to dig into stuff, I get to manage my own kind of diary. I get, someone tells me something on the phone and I write it. There's a real simplicity in that. Good broadcast journalism is a completely, it's a very, very similar skill set in the fundamentals, but in terms of how you tell the story, it's very different. And I don't think I would be very good at it. So I haven't necessarily had that inclination. I like the elements of broadcast journalism where I've been on a few like political podcasts recently, and it's quite cool to be on them and it's exciting. But it's also, I don't feel like it's right for me. And the answer to the question of where I feel in 10 years, where I'd like to be, I'd like, that question might have been answered differently a few months ago, but right now I'd like to be in a job.
I think there's plenty of journalists and prospective journalists who probably agree with you there. You know, right now the future is certainly uncertain, and I think it's almost dangerous to you know, tempt fate and say where any of us are going to be. Will, it's been fantastic speaking to you. It's been great to get your insight, and I just want to, you know, once again say thank you very much.
No, cheers, Gareth. Thank you.
A huge thanks again to Will for sharing his time with us. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, we're at Journals in Lockdown. And make sure you catch our next episode when Mike Staines will be speaking to music journalist Bethan Elvin from BBC Wales.